12-ounce sports. Quench your sports thirst. Articles, live shows, and podcasts. Visit 12ozsportsradio.com. Hey folks, this is Lee W. Mowen of the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast, and I'm here to talk to you about my bookie. Since 2014, it's the place where you can bet on anything, anywhere, anytime. Get up to $1,000 on your first deposit bonus. Use the promo code 12OZSports. As well as sports betting, you can play some casino games, take in some live odds in Madden 20 and NBA 2K20, and even bet with Bitcoin. Visit mybookie.ag and use that promo code 12OZSports. That's 12OZSports, MyBookie, the industry's most rewarding loyalty program.
It's episode 165 of the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast, and our special guest is Jim DeBelt, who was the first guest on this podcast nearly 3 years ago. Jim is currently writing a book covering high school girls basketball in the state of Ohio. We're talking about the book, upcoming changes to local conferences, and we'll catch up since episode 15. It's the Local Sports Podcast. Welcome to the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast with Lee W. Mowen. This is a weekly podcast covering all sports in Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio. From Lima to the Ohio River and northern Kentucky, from eastern Indiana to Madison County and all points in between, this is your source of local Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio sports. Visit the LeeWMowen.com/podcasts to find your favorite podcasting platform. Music created with the Splash app. Time for another episode with your host, Lee W. Mowen. As you heard it correctly, it is episode 165. It is the first episode with the brand new Rodecaster Pro. Man, this thing is great. Very excited to continue using that, but more excited to get to episode 165's guest. It's Jim DeBelt. Jim has been on this podcast twice. Last time was episode 15, all those moons ago back in 2017. Jim, how are you?
Lee, it's great talking to you again, and I'm excited to continue to listen to your podcast. You're doing a great job bringing the sports to the area.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate the kind words, and it's nice to see you still in, you know, covering girls basketball in Southwest Ohio, around the Pittsburgh area, Southeast Ohio. I saw you published an article today. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I actually am working for Prep Girls Hoops Ohio, which is an online, like a media outlet for girls basketball. And it goes all over the United States. There's 25 or so states that are so far in the network, and I actually kind of run the Ohio part of it. So, and I have a couple of really, really great people working with me to promote girls basketball in Ohio. And it's basically a Division I subscription based certified scouting service / media outlet that allows us to promote kids throughout the state of Ohio. And as I mentioned, all over the country in the different outlets.
Like I mentioned, Jim DeBelt has been on this podcast twice. The last time was episode 15, and Jim was the very first guest on this podcast all the way back to episode 4, when it was called The Gem on the Queen's Crown. Really should have kept the Cincinnati Dayton Sports Podcast name throughout, but, you know, details.
Hey. Yeah, just details.
Just little details. So, let's begin. I'd like to sort of recap a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? And how did you get up in the Upper Valley part of the area?
Well, Lee, actually, I grew up in Tip City, and I moved to a couple different places. And when my son was in kindergarten, I wanted to put him through the school system here. So I moved back and bought a home here in Tip and have been here since 2003. He's, of course, graduated and doing his thing now, but just love the community. I love the Upper Miami Valley. I work in Troy at a hospital. And so I'm obviously most of my everything I do is pretty much north of the Dayton area, except when it comes to going to, you know, cover games. But most of my free time is spent up here, and it's, you know, I just like it up here north of Dayton, and, you know, it's just kind of hometown feel, Tip City.
What got you into girls basketball and writing about the sport?
Well, when I was in high school, a senior in high school, Coach Tom Reddick, who was my English teacher also, I had started writing for the newspaper here in town, the city paper, when I was 15 years old. I covered the Dayton Flyers, had a column called the Flyer Review, and I wrote about the Flyers every week. It was a weekly paper. And that was about the time that they made their big tournament run with Roosevelt Chapman and Damon Goodwin and that whole group that came through under Coach Donaher. And so I started writing about UD when I was a 15-year-old high school student. And then when I got to my senior year, Coach Reddick asked me if I'd want to help out the girls basketball team, like do some stats and stuff like that. I said, yeah, I'd love to. That'd be great. And then we ended up going to the district finals, hit a buzzer beater to go to the regionals. We go to the regional finals, hit a buzzer beater, go to the state final four. This whole time I'm like wide-eyed, like this is really cool. You know, it's kind of pretty exciting for an 18-year-old, you know, to come through and watch your classmates continue to succeed on the court. Then we go to the final four. We beat Akron Hoban in the 1 year that the state tournament was not in Columbus, which of course now it's in Dayton next year, but that year is in Akron. So we beat Akron Hoban pretty much in their backyard in the final four, and then went to the championship game and got beat by Millersburg West Holmes, who had a 108-game winning streak going. We had him down 2 with 7 seconds to go, missed a free throw. They come down, score, went to overtime and beat us. And on the way home, I told Coach, I said, Coach, I really love this. This is so exciting. He goes, you need to take your love for writing and help promote the girls game. Because at the time, it wasn't cool to promote girl sports. Now everybody who can make a buck will do it. You know what I'm saying? But back in the day, it wasn't cool back in the day. So I did it, started in the late 80s and branched out around Ohio, starting around 89 or 90. And 30 years after kind of really expanding my wings, here it is, 2020, and I'm still going strong.
You mentioned the Flyers when you started to cover them. That was also about the time Anthony Grant, now the head coach of UD, he was on that team.
Yes, he was. He sure was. He was. I think he came off the bench, and you know, of course, that he had a great career at UD, and he's coming back to have a great coaching stint, obviously with the success they had last year. So
times have definitely changed since Anthony Grant was a player. Now as a head coach, the uniforms are all different and everything. But
definitely.
That's one of my favorite local stories. How about some of your favorite local stories about when you started to cover girls basketball?
Well, my biggest thing is I like to work with people and I like to help promote the athletes. The coaches have always been wonderful. Never had a problem with a coach not being cooperative or not wanting to help me help them, kind of thing. Because, you know, it goes hand in hand. You know, if they help me, I'm able to help them a lot better. So, you know, just the athletes have come through over the years. You know, this is my, like I said, my 35th year in girls basketball coming up. And I just love the opportunity to promote the kids that they work really hard. Boys basketball gets a lot of exposure. Football, of course, gets a ton of exposure. Girls basketball is starting to, like I said, get some more exposure. But for those of us, I call us dinosaurs that have been in this game for this long, there aren't many of us left that are still, you know, we're here at the beginning. But it's just, I love to meet the people. And I've been reconnecting with a lot of former players for a project that I'm doing and just reconnecting with players from 30 years ago that I haven't seen has been one of the most amazing COVID stories, I guess, because everybody, you know, everybody asks for a COVID story, where mine is I started a big project and reconnecting with a lot of great players, and it's been an amazing couple of months.
So how did you wind up on deciding to write a book about some of the successes of girls basketball in Ohio?
Well, Lee, you know, I've always loved to just promote them. And there's been so many players in Ohio that have come along that, you know, from, like I said, back when I started till now, there's been so many great players. And Ohio, if people don't know, is in the top three states in the country every year for recruitable players and players that go into college at the next level. Texas, California, and Ohio are usually the big three in girls basketball around the country. Mm. So I'm thinking, you know, there's so many great players. I decided one day I woke up and I said, you know, I've been in this for 35 years. How much longer am I going to stick around? Who knows? You know, I don't know. You know, every day I get up, I'm thinking, you know, how much longer am I going to do this? And I said, you know, before I ever do decide to step away, I want to leave a great legacy. Not that the work that I have doesn't speak for itself, but something that will be memorable, something that people will always be able to go to learn about the history and the players that have come up over the years. So decided to write a book on the top girls basketball players in Ohio during my tenure of the last 30 years, 1990 through the 2020 graduating class.
30 years of girls basketball, that's a lot of players to witness. Now, how are you deciding on who gets covered in the book?
Well, a lot of them is basically just my memory of them. Like I said, I have all the All-Ohio teams, the All-State teams that have been published. And so I started by going through all of the All-State teams and creating an initial rough draft of all the players that were listed high, like first, second, or third team, highlighted the players that were two or three time state All-State players, like 2 or 3 years. And I ended up, after I got done with that rough draft, I had about 350 names on this piece of paper, 350. So I'm thinking, now what am I going to do with all these names? So, you know, obviously a lot of it was by memory, and I knew 90% of the players to 95% in that range, I clearly remember them. I took a couple of years off in the late 90s, but when I came back, you know, so I didn't miss very much of the game, but just, you know, the memory and all the names, I recognize all the names. And for, like I said, most of them, I remembered clearly about most of them. So it's just basically an opinion on who I think the top 150 players are that have come through Ohio in the last 30 years.
I believe it was the Dayton Daily News article. I believe David Jablonski wrote that, a previous guest on this podcast, by the way.
Yes. I listened to him. He was very good.
Yeah, that's all those interviews, I think, were great. But
oh, they were great. Yes, definitely.
The article mentioned that, does every player get their own chapter?
Yeah. Now, Lee, when I say chapter, like a lot of times chapters are 10 pages, but in this case, chapters are 1 or 2 pages. I just call them chapters because every player will have a 1 to 2 page write up. So I contact every player. I have personally talked to probably 80 to 90 players so far in the last 2.5 months. And so I talk to them and basically get all the information I need. We have a nice long 45 minute to an hour and a half conversation, depending upon how well I knew them. A lot of it's reconnecting, just touching base with each other. But, you know, for that, I get a lot of their information and I create their story. So everybody's story is going to be based on your high school memories, how you started in the game, who are your inspirations, you know, what are you doing now? Are you still in the game? But I always lead it with some kind of a really cool opening to catch attention. And it's based on their life. Like, I have one girl in the book who played high school basketball in the Northern Miami Valley, went to the Ohio State University and played for 4 years. And now she is a nun out in Illinois, which is really cool. You know, that's a job that most people don't go after. But, you know, she's and so that's just one example of just, now obviously I didn't personally talk to her yet. I talked to her parents, but, you know, they sent her all the stuff I needed. She filled it out and she sent it back up to me. So, you know, most of the time, you know, everybody's been very grateful. I've never had anybody decline to be in it. Everybody's been very, the thing I hear the most, Lee, is just thank you for remembering me. That's what that's the most thing. That's what people have mostly said is just thanks for remembering about my career.
Now, have you thought about how long the book will be? You mentioned how many players you would like to cover and that each chapter is going to be about a page to two. But do you know how much more outside the players you're going to cover in the book?
Yeah, I'm actually probably, Lee, I'm looking at probably, I could see it be about 250 or 300 pages when I'm done. Because I've decided to add another special, three other special sections, actually. So I have a section known as like the others to consider / honorable mention players by decade. So these are the players that are not going to be featured as the 150, but they're a list of just a list of names who also are strongly considered as some of the better players. And then I have a section that's going to be quotes from the stars. So every player will answer the question about if you could give advice to a teenager now who wants to go into the next level, what advice would that be? And obviously from different eras, if you're a 1990 graduate or you're a 2020 graduate, you had a different experience because recruiting back in the day is a lot different than it is today.
Absolutely. And you know, the game itself has changed too from that time span as well.
It sure has. The game is different. You know, there's a lot, I think the game, the players are a lot more athletic now. The rim is still the same distance off the ground. The free throw line is still the same distance from the rim. You know, so the concept of the actual physical part of the game hasn't changed. The concept, the fact that social media is such a big part of today's game. And the fact that back in 1995, for example, so many people said I had to go out and just get better by myself in my driveway. Or some of them have been lucky enough to have live on a farm. Their barn was turned into a basketball court. But nowadays, people just shell out money left and right and go to trainers all the time, which is nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think going to a trainer will definitely help your game, but also you also need to work on the game yourself, in your driveway, by yourself, to make yourself a better player. And that's, back in the day, that's all anybody did. They worked on their own game and made themselves a great player.
And also, I mean, back in the day, there's got to be sports trainers out there, but like you mentioned, nowadays, you know, sports is a big business. And, you know, it's all about, you know, improving yourself and trying to be the best out there.
And you look at it, people go to trainers to become a better basketball player. And then they go to trainers to become better in better fitness shape. And then they go to trainers for mental health part of the game, you know, to become a mentally stronger in the game. So you have coaches that stuff like that. So there are a lot of options that are out there now that were not out there 25 years ago. And, you know, hey, hats off to everybody who takes advantage of it because it's there for a reason. You know, I mean, today's player, it's just a different kind of player today than it was back when I first started.
I was going to mention that a couple years back, Wright State, I think, was one of the first in the country to have a mental game coordinator where, you know, pretty much all he would do is work on, you know, how the players are thinking and working with that aspect. And I don't know if you would see that back in the 1990s.
No, you really didn't. Like I said, and the mental part of the game is so important now. I mean, everybody wants that advantage. Everybody wants that advantage over their opponent. You know, y'all, the competition nowadays for anything is just incredible. Any advantage you can get over the girl next to you is one that most people will take because it's like, hey, it just gives me just a little bit of an edge over her to maybe, you know, not only maybe compete better, maybe draw the attention of coaches a little bit better, you know, so it all kind of wraps together. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that kind of stuff, it wasn't readily available. If it was, I didn't know about it back in the day. So, you know, you look at things now and, you know, players are, you know, getting an opportunity to really reap the benefits of a lot of newer technology and a lot of newer things.
And something else I just thought of, nutritionists. I mean, I'm sure they existed back in the 90s, but I mean, nowadays, I think all major teams have at least one.
Yeah. I mean, that's very important. You know, what you put in your body is very important if you're going to get the most out of your body. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, now you look at people that go to the CrossFit or to even go to the Y and work out and try to get in the best shape. But you also got to have the best nutrition. And so having somebody guide you will obviously be a benefit for you if you're trying to become the most, you know, well-rounded athlete and physically fit and mentally fit and you know, nutritionally fit, I guess, athlete that you can become to make that next step and maybe get that free education at the college level.
Now, you mentioned the book will have sort of an honorable mention for athletes. Is this any chance of turning into a sequel?
You know, Lee, I don't know if, you know, writing this book has been, it's been great. I have zero complaints about it. Not one complaint. Maybe the only semi-complaint was like, oh my gosh, I've only got 40 of them done. I've got 110 more to go. But then I look at it and think, you know, I do have 40 of them done. That's a great start to something that, and this isn't going to happen, you know, in today's world, and I'm as bad as everybody else. You probably are too. You want immediate gratification. You want immediate, I want things happen right now. And this book isn't going to be a weekend project. You know, it's going to be a several month project. So I would say the answer to your question is probably, this will probably be my first and last book that I write, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It would be nice to write something else, but I mean, I don't know what really I'm smart enough to write about except for this. You know, this is going to really take a lot of toll and you know, a lot of time and stuff. But like I said, the best part of the book is, well, the best part of the book is going to be having one copy in my hand when it comes out in March.
Yeah.
But the second favorite part is talking on the phone with the Katie Smiths, three-time Olympic gold medalist, or Marlene Stallings, the only player, girl in Ohio to score 3,000 points in her career. You know, several players that went to the pros, several that coaching in college. You know, like I said, it's just, that is probably, taking away the actual finished product, that's probably the most exciting part of the book for me, is just reconnecting and talking about the old times, talking about the coaches and just little fun experiences that we had together. You know, just, do you remember the time when this happened or that happened? It's like, that's 30 years ago, you know, and a girl that I talked to, her dad was a great high school coach up at Sherwood Fairview High School in Northwest Ohio. Mm. And her maiden name was Casey English. And she is actually a basketball coach in East Lansing now, married with several kids. And her daughter actually is going to be a freshman at UD in the fall. And just talking to her for an hour about her dad passed away several years ago. And just talking about, you know, what he did for the game. He was one of the early people that started the thought process of, we're going to, you know, defense is important, but you're going to have to score a lot to beat us. They love to run, they love to press, and they love to score. And, you know, just that kind of stuff, talking to Casey on the phone and, you know, tentatively planning a lunch when she's coming down to Dayton the next time, stuff like that is the kind of stuff that I really enjoy. Just talking to people like Beth Ostendorf, who was went to Vanderbilt, played at Urbana for a couple of years, and then moved to Pickerington. People like Lynette Roth. And like I said, Justine Ratterman was just on my Zoom Facebook watch party last night. She, Versailles state champion, first time they won the state for girls basketball was when Justine was there. So just connecting with all these people has made the book extremely worth my time.
And you mentioned Justine Ratterman, great flyer, great career at UD.
She went in the Hall of Fame last year. You know, she could do it all. She could do it all. She was a strong post player, has had a great game, had a good range to her shot, you know, played a little bit overseas. And now she is assistant coach up at Marquette up in Milwaukee, along with Megan Duffy from CJ, who is their head coach. Both of those players are in the book as well. So Megan and Justine. So, you know, just, yeah, at UD, she was a star. Allie Malott, people remember Allie Malott from the Flyers. She's from Middletown, Madison. I spoke to her a couple weeks ago. She's going to be in there. So, yeah, it's there's a lot of very familiar names. And the cool thing is, you know, if you're 16 right now, you're going to recognize some of the names. If you're 30, you're going to recognize some of the names. If you're 50 plus like me, you're going to recognize some of the names. So, you know, it's kind of, and everybody's like, well, I can't wait to buy a copy. And they may not know 10 names in there, but they just want to learn about who the great players have been over the last 30 years. A lot of them don't really probably have a great connection with a lot of them. They may know two, three players, maybe because, oh, hey, I remember her when she played 10 years ago, but they just want to read who some of the legends and people. And what I always tell people is those players are the ones that paved the way for you guys today. You know, they're the pioneers in 1990 that set the way for people in 2000, who then set the way for today's players. So it's just it's a chain. It's like a ripple effect. And that's the biggest thing. People just want to read about the history.
Now, before I get to the question of who you're covering, I just want to mention, you're a hockey guy. I'm a hockey guy. And definitely there's one book that I hope gets a sequel. It's Chuck Gabringer's Hockey in Dayton, History Through Pictures. I mean, granted, at the end, it talked a little bit about the demons. So, you know, demons, demolition, that's not going to be a lot for a second book. But,
sure,
you know, there's part of me that still wants a second hockey book.
Well, I mean, you look at it, Lee, and you were a big part of the hockey here in Dayton when they had the success, and, you know, before they closed. And, you know, with starting back with the Gems and the days of, you know, gosh, way back when Lyle Stieg was the voice of the Gems, all the way up through, you know, the Bombers and then the resurgent Gems and the demolition, the Demons. That, hockey in Dayton, it's really unfortunate that it's taking the road that it's taken. You and I love the sport. Unfortunately, there weren't a lot of you and I's out there because, you know, it's just like you saw a small crowd and, you know, Hare Arena was just such a great place. And unfortunately, of course, it had closed and then the tornado destroyed it even more than that. But,
yeah,
you know, I hope someday, and I know you do too, because I know you love the sport. You do a great job with the hockey on, you know, with the announcing of the different levels. And I hope someday I'm still alive when hockey does return to Dayton, because I think it's going to be a great, you know, it's an action-packed game that people don't understand the game. When you go watch it, though, that's when you fall in love with it.
Absolutely. And thank you for the kind words, Jim. It's just, I don't know when it will happen, if it will happen, but there you go.
Here's the funny thing. You and I were together. My only game I ever broadcast.
That's right.
You and I were together and did a game way back. You have to refresh my memory. You got those dates more than I do. But
October 2012, it was the very first home game for the Dayton Demons, and that was my first game in the professional levels.
Yes.
Or semi-professional. That's what they're going by nowadays. But whatever, it still counts.
It's all good. Hey, yeah. You know, it was a great time. I enjoyed it. You know, did I know what I was doing? Probably not a whole lot, but it was fun. We got through it, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I somehow I stuck around for another for four seasons, but you know,
hey, game's a little fast for me, but you younger people can handle that. That's you know, it's you see people like Doc Emmerich and stuff, and it's like, how do these guys keep up with that so fast? But you know, those are the legends of the game. So,
well, the thing that presses me about Doc Emmerich is he learned most of his vocabulary when he had the internship with the Dayton Gems back in the first team, and he was at Miami U at the time. So it's always
that's
something.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's always something. That's like, that's kind of cool.
Well, basketball is my life. Hockey's a love. I can tell you that basketball is what I'm known for, but hockey is something that, of course, anybody in Ohio knows. If they say Pittsburgh Penguins, and I know there's a lot of Blue Jacket fans in this area, but anybody that says that, and I've had people tell me that, they said, oh my gosh, I saw this Penguin. I was watching the game or the highlights and the Penguins came on and I thought of you. And this is from people all over the place. So it's like, it's kind of like, you know, you become who you are a fan of. And of course, everybody knows who I'm a fan of. So it's, you know, it's a great sport, and you know, you keep doing the great job you do.
Absolutely. Now let's head back to that book, shall we?
Yes, absolutely.
You mentioned a couple athletes right off the bat, but tell me some of the athletes that, you know, are more, what's a better way to put this? Tell me some of the athletes that folks can remember from a couple seasons ago.
Well, obviously, the one player that's in the book that's the most recent is Madeline Westbeld. And I have not got a chance to reach out to Madeline or Catherine yet. Her sister's also in the book. You know, Catherine graduated from Notre Dame as a national champion. But Madeline is a 2020 graduate from Fairmont. And she's also going to Notre Dame. You know, they have a new coaching staff. Muffet McGraw retired after the end of the last season. And obviously, you know, she's what she's done, her success speaks for itself. So I do look for people, you know, for Madeline to have a great, successful experience at Notre Dame. There's no question about that. Then you have people like down at Mason, Sandy Puisis. She's a 19 grad. Michaela Morris from Kenton Ridge. She is one of the only people. First of all, she holds the state record for most rebounds in her career. And she also had over 1,000 rebounds. I don't remember the total, but she also had 2,000 points. So she's one of the very rare people that had a 1,000 rebound career. So that's, and she's, you know, she's at Quinnipiac right now. So she's, you know, had a great year with her college out there. You have people like Shai Magruder. Shai played at Trotwood, moved over from Wayne to Trotwood and she's at New Mexico right now. She's a fantastic player that's also going to be featured. And those are some of the ones that, those are some of the newer ones, some of the younger ones that people will recognize, over the last couple of years. And there's, you know, there's obviously some other names that are a little older than them that, you know, they'll be able to read next year when the book comes out. But those are some of the more high profile area kids that are some of the younger ones that have made the book.
Now give me some athletes' names that, spoilers, when it was 1990, I was 2. So give me some of the athletes that towards the older side of the book. I probably shouldn't say older, but you get what I'm saying. That played a while back in the 90s.
Well, obviously, you know, probably the first one that comes to mind is a point guard from Pickerington. And I didn't know how I was going to reach out to her. But it is a Susie Castle. And Susie played at Pickerington, graduated in 1990. So she's just a little bit younger than I am. She actually works for the Habitat for Humanity down in Florida. And we talked for about an hour on the phone last week as well. She went to Bowling Green and, you know, was a great pass first point guard, kid that, she's not a kid anymore, but, you know, at the time she was a kid that really, you know, put Pickerington, you know, and Pickerington obviously has the most players in the book. And I'm trying to go by memory. I want to say they have 7 out of the, because, you know, in the 90s, from 90 through 99, Pickerington won 5 state championships, and they finished runner-up once. So 6 out of the, 10 years, they were first or second in the state, in the Division I, the big school division. So obviously they're going to have people like Susie Castle, Michelle Shade. I mentioned Beth Ostendorf. She started her career at Urbana, played her first 2 years at Urbana, won a state championship. And then she ended up at Pickerington, had to move to Columbus. And so she played at Pickerington for 2 years. So she is a kid. And I just talked to her last week. She lives out in San Diego right now. So just talking to some of those players, Katie Smith, of course, everybody knows Katie. She's the best player, in my opinion, the greatest player to come through Ohio. She graduated in 1992, went to the Ohio State University. She jumped into Ohio State as a freshman and led them to the championship game, the NCAA finals, got beat by Texas Tech and Cheryl Swoops in the finals. And then Katie went on to the WNBA, the ABL, the WNBA, where she became the first women's professional player to score 5,000 points as a pro. Now that has since been broken. But you know, now she's a coach. She's 3-time Olympic gold medalist. And I believe she's the only person in this book that has been inducted into the James A. Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, which happened a couple of years ago for her. You know, she was in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame already, but to go into the Naismith Hall of Fame along the likes of Michael and Larry Bird and, you know, all those players, you know, Magic and Kareem and all those players that played in this, you know, back in the, when we were kids, you know, that are now in the Hall of Fame, she was inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame, which is unheard of, you know, but that's the biggest name. And she's a 92 graduate. So she's, you know, she's still coaching the WNBA and having a great time. She worked one of my events here in Dayton a couple of years ago and got a chance to talk to her and her and I are still friends. So we reconnected quite a bit there got an opportunity to you know, get her information in the book as well. And so, yeah, there's quite a few players from the 90s that are, you know, still wanting to talk basketball. I talked to, you know, I said Casey English is in the book from Sherwood Fairview. She's the one I talked about earlier. You know, several players, like I said, from all over the state. I mean, every corner of the state is in the book. So one of my favorite players, and I'll never forget this young lady. She's graduated from Ohio State. She went to Oak Hill High School. And I remember back in the early 90s, I was covering an AAU state championship. And that's when AAU basketball was really it was really good basketball back then. Mm. And the state, she was a sixth grader. I never knew who she was. But someone said, you got to go watch this sixth grader play. And I'm like, sixth grader? I don't watch sixth graders play for what I do. And I said, all right, it's in West Carrollton. So I drove to West Carrollton from here, which is 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I walk into the gym. Hocking Valley Stars, which is a sixth or seventh grade, I think seventh grade team, is who she was playing for, a seventh grade team, was playing in the national tournament. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, and they were really good. They were seventh graders, though, right? So her name is Jamie Lewis. So Jamie comes down and half court as a sixth grader, and she's about 5'2", fires this pass to whoever was open under the basket. The girl got behind her defender. Jamie comes down, zips this pass through midcourt, I mean, on a bullet as a sixth grader to this girl for a layup. I just turned around, walked out of there. I couldn't believe what I saw. I'm like, I didn't leave. I just walked outside. I'm like, what did I just see? Because I had some people there that I was friends with. I'm like, did you just see that? And we became great friends. You know, she ended up averaged about 31 points a game as a freshman in high school, was all state, and then went to Ohio State and set the all-time assist record at Ohio State. And now she lives back in Columbus, but she had a tryout in the WNBA. But, you know, people like that, you know, and I'm really favored to the older players. Although when I put my list together, it's very ironic how the numbers are similar, you know, by decades they're almost similar, really similar. And then, you know, so, and by divisions they're pretty similar, because I don't want to get 100 players from the 90s. That would not be, that's not feasible, but it was very close. I was pretty close to the same number of kids in the 90s, the 2000s and the 10s, and I didn't do it on purpose that way. It just landed that way. And, but it was, I'm real partial towards the players back in the 90s, because those are who I came up into the game with. Those are the people that I got to, you know, get to know. Those are the first people I met in the game. And, you know, just to rekindle the relationships we had was just amazing.
Absolutely. I think that's a pretty cool thing that you're doing with the book.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I like it. Now, let me ask this.
Yeah.
Is there a wish list or like a second list that you have in case you can't get any of the interviews?
I think they'll get them all. I think, I mean, here's how I look at it. When I went into this, because social media, I'm very deeply entrenched in a very inner circle for girls basketball. So people that know other people who know, like if I have to reach out to so-and-so, usually I just start with my circle and boom, they know them. Somebody knows them in my circle. AAU coaches from back in the day or players. I've reached out to players through players. That I've already, like, I'll talk to somebody. I'll say, oh man, I can't reach out. I can't find this player. Oh, I'm friends with her. So they call her. And the next thing you know, I'm on the phone with her in a couple of days after that. So when I started this book, I honestly believe because of social media, if I can find 80%, I think 80%, 75 to 80%, I'll be able to find without too much trouble. The other 20 to 25%, I'm going to have to work for probably. And it's going to be, and there's a couple that I'm really struggling trying to find. It's like, you know, I can't call the school because nobody's there. You know, I always start with their college or high school because they're probably in their Hall of Fame. And then, you know, I reached out to this one player's college, didn't hear back from him. High school, didn't hear back from him. So it's like, okay, so a player like that may take a little time to get a hold of. But everybody else, for the most part, even the players that I didn't think I'd be able to find, or I figured it would be tough to find, I've actually already found. So, yeah, there's still some I'm trying to dig up and find. But even, like I said, some of the ones that I thought, oh, she's going to be tough to reach, I've already reached out to them. So, you know, that never really bothered me too much because I figured in today's society, I'll be able to find most people.
You got to love social media, right?
Oh, it's safe. I mean, if I didn't have social media, I wouldn't write this book because I wouldn't be able to find a lot of these people.
Now, you
know, but social media has really helped me.
Now, you mentioned that the book should be available March 2021. Is that correct?
That's correct. So my timeline is I want to have the book written by October 1st. Okay. That means the roughest of the rough drafts. I want all the players, chapters, everything in there by October 1st. Is that a reasonable goal? I think it's obtainable. Is it a sure thing? Well, certainly not, but I think it's obtainable to reach it by October 1st. And then I'll have until January 1st to read the book several times. A couple of friends of mine, one of my old high school English teachers actually said he would proof it for me with me. So, which is nice to have another set of eyes on it. But so I have 3 months then, October, November, December to proof the book, to make sure all the photos have photo releases signed, all that kind of stuff. And then January 1st, I sent it in to do the, and I'm self-publishing.
Okay.
So I'm self-publishing the book. And the printers are in Akron. So I just have to get them the final copy and then they'll get everything and bind it all up and all that kind of stuff. But I'm self-publishing. So I'm debating about hiring an editor to, I don't know yet because I mean, I do this for a living. I write for a living. And so I don't know if I'm going to add that expense to what it's already going to cost me. But, you know, whether I do or not, my January and February, I'll probably put the finishing touches on the book, get the cover done, get the foreword written by somebody, which is, I don't know who that's going to be yet. But, you know, get the minor details done. And then, you know, by March 1st, hopefully have the books available. I'm not going to sell them on Amazon. We'll probably sell them on my basketball website. So people can just pay for them online and I can ship them out. I'm going to do some various book signings at the state. We're trying to bring the players back to the state tournament and recognize them at next year's state tournament, the UD Arena. And then maybe have a book signing. And then a couple of the players that are older wants to maybe go back to their high school and do a book signing at their high school with me and them to promote the book. and to give back to their alma mater for like today's athletes can get a book, or they can go back and the staff can, you know, just a chance to go back and give it back to their high schools.
Now, you mentioned it's going to be self-published. What are some of the benefits of doing that, and what are some of the extra challenges of self-publishing a book?
Well, the biggest challenge for me is cost. I mean, and it's not that I can't afford to do it, but that's honestly probably the biggest challenge. I think some of the benefits are is I have a lot more control over what the book is going to look like. I have a lot more control over the timing, getting it prepared and ready to go. I mean, if I go with the publisher, then you're basically at their you're at their mercy. As far as when they're ready to send the book out. I'm on a very strict deadline, as I want the book in my hand March 1st. And because I've got to have them by state tournament. And so that's kind of, and I gave myself plenty of time. It's only June. So I gave myself, and like I said, I've got about 40 done so far. I've got 40 out of the 150, which that's a lot to do, but still 40 is not a bad start. I mean, it's only June, middle of June. So, that's the best part about self-publishing is that I have a lot more control over things time-wise. And another challenges could be advertising for the book, promoting the book, because they would do that. I have to do that myself. So I thought about maybe hiring a college student as a intern to possibly help promote the book. You know, set up some things and help push the book out to different people. You know, it'd be a lot, probably more inexpensive for me to do that than to pay the publisher to do that. So, you know, there's a lot going into it. A lot of things I'm thinking about, and, you know, I just decided to self-publish. So I have a little bit better opportunity to make the book look the way I want it to look.
You mentioned you weren't going the Amazon route to sell the book. You mentioned, you know, on your website, you'll advertise it. How much is the book going for? What's your plan price?
My plan price, you know, I haven't really thought too much about it, but I'm thinking to sell the book in two different ways. One would be the paperback, and that might be 15 to 20. I would like to do it for 15, 16 bucks, something like that. And then I would do the hardback with the sleeve on it, and that might be $25 to $30, because it's obviously more costly to print that. So I'll probably print a handful of those and sell those, be more expensive, but the other ones would be a little more reasonable, and it's only a few dollars. But some people, you know, just may be happy with the paperback, and you know, it just depends upon how many I have to print and what I decide to go with as far as that's concerned.
Going back towards the players, do you have a count on how many schools are represented in this book? And if you do, who are some of the schools that are the more common shown in this book?
You know, that's a great question, Lee. I have not gone through and separated by schools yet. That's actually on my to-do list at some point. Probably when I get closer to producing the book and finalizing the book, so I have an idea of where I want to schedule some of these signings. But obviously the schools like Pickerington, Chaminade Julienne, Beaver Creek has some players on the list. You know, you look at schools, Garfield Heights, Trinity, which is also Regina, has several players on the book in the book as well. Afrocentric is a school that a lot of people know of. Berlin Highland, a legendary Division 3/4, whatever year it is, team, has a couple of really good legends in the book as well. Those are some of the ones that have like multiple players. But you know, Heath has a couple out of Columbus. It's a variety of schools all over Ohio. I mean, really, I've touched all bases, you know, as far as like all corners of the state are pretty much covered. And I, like I said, I did not do that on plan. That's just the way it landed. You know, it's like I didn't want to have 80 people from the Dayton area, you know, and then people are like, well, the whole book's on Dayton area, which is not true. There's several of them from this area, but there's, you know, schools, Toledo, Cleveland, Columbus, you know, Cincinnati, all over the place that are represented.
You mentioned you don't have a full list of them, but are there any schools that are closed or renamed or anything like that that don't exist as they did back then?
Yeah, I believe that Jewett Sio and Bel Air St. John, I believe off the top of my head, are both closed. Regina is closed. Regina is up in the Cleveland area. They were closed. Jewett Sio, where Amy Marks went to school, she was a high-flying scoring machine for back in the early 90s. They are closed. And like I said, Bel Air St. John, I believe they're closed as well. Stephanie Petho, who I just talked to today for like the third time, she graduated in 92 from Bel Air St. John. Her junior year, she averaged 35.8 points a game. And as a senior, she averaged 37.5. And yeah, she was a high scorer. She went to Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh. And, but those, I believe both those schools are closed also. So yeah, that's, you know, we obviously won't be going back there, but you know, we'll be sitting there by ourselves, but on some empty land. But no, that's a great question because, yeah, at least three of those schools are no longer even around.
I thought about that. I was looking at a Wikipedia article about Southwest Ohio conferences and just saw, especially when Cincinnati had the big blast of like just this super conference in 1989, just seeing some of those schools just closed. And I remember when I was in high school, Valley View played Cincinnati Jacobs in football and they closed a couple years after I graduated high school. So it's,
yeah. Mother of Mercy is another school that closed. Cincinnati Mother of Mercy.
Yeah.
They closed as well. And, of course, you know, Dayton's had a couple schools downtown that have closed. And so it's, that's a great question because I'm, you know, that's something to look into when I get, you know, a little bit ahead of the schedule. I'm a little behind right now, not a whole lot. I'm probably 3 or 4 days behind. So it's not that bad. I can make that up over a weekend. But, you know, my goal is to do one player chapter per day. And it would take me up to the beginning of October. Some days I'll do more. Some days I won't get to do any, but my goal is one per day. I did mine this morning already for the today. And, that would get me through, like I said, until, you know, my goal is October 1st to have the rough draft, the very rough draft written.
Now, with closed schools, is it tougher to reach out to people that were part of that team or those teams compared to, you know, schools that are still open, of course, but maybe the coaches or the administrators, the players aren't, you know, they haven't been in that area for quite some time. What's tougher in your book?
Well, I'm pretty lucky on that because with the three or four that I have that I know of, Regina is now Regina has a kid that I'm going to struggle to try to find. So that I'm working on that right now. But the other two, Stephanie Petho and Amy Marks, Amy's actually married and she's living in Eastern Ohio. Her husband is a baseball coach. I think it was with the Baltimore Orioles organization at one time. I'm not exactly sure where he's at now. Stephanie Petho, like I said, their school closed. I reached her through University of Pittsburgh because I'm friends with the coaches over there. And I went through their departments and they got me connected with her. And then, you know, we've talked 2 or 3 times since then. But, you know, it's difficult. It just makes it a little more challenging when I run through all of my options of my circle and then the school's not open anymore, so I can't call them. So there's always the option of trying to call their college where they went to college. So that's, you know, that's also on my, that's all my list of options to choose from as well, is to just call their college and go through their, you know, alumni association. And then they can usually get me hooked up with them.
In the book, how often do you have to deal with conference changes, schools merging, divisions you know, changing. How much is that involved in the book?
You know, not at all. I mean, really, basically, I just take their story. We talk, and like I said, I take notes from the story that we talk about. We talk about the back in the day, and there hasn't been really that I've written so far, none that have changed that they've said anything to me. Like, hey, I was player of the year in the league, and then we switched over to this league, and I was player of the year this as a senior. You know, nothing major to throw anything off track or anything like that.
Sticking with conferences, this is going to be brief, but yeah. In Southwest Ohio, we're seeing a lot of changes in conferences, schools leaving to go to other conferences. Like this year, if we have sports, it'll be the last year of the Cross-County Conference. And, you know, my hometown of West Alexandria has a team there, Twin Valley South, of course.
Yes, yes.
And now most of the CCC, yep, one of two Panthers on 503.
Yeah, that's right. Not 5 miles apart, probably.
It feels like it's like 50 miles apart, but that's because right. It's nothing but countryside. But
that's true. That's true.
And before 1985, there was Twin Valley North as well, but that's in Lewisburg. But
I got you.
Anyway, the conferences, they're shifting, and it seems like it's not just high schools, but it's everywhere now. But in terms of conferences changing in Southwest Ohio, do you see this as more of a thing that can help girls basketball? Do you see it as a thing that it's going to keep happening, and any changes from here on out, we shouldn't be surprised? What do you see in a conference change?
Well, you know, obviously that's touched me as well, because I live in Tip City, and, you know, they broke away and created the Miami Valley League with basically schools from the GWAC. Mm-hmm. So there really was no change, except for the name, because Tip would still play Troy, and they play Greenville, and they play Vandalia, play Piqua. And Sydney, of course, they dropped to the other half of the new division. So, I mean, in my personal case in Tip, it hasn't really affected. Now, if you go to the Cross County Conference and then the new I forgot the new conference with Bethel.
Three Rivers Athletic
Three
Conference.
Three Rivers, yes, thank you. Bethel and Layman Catholic, Riverside, and I believe maybe a couple, Northridge maybe.
And Milton Union too.
Milton Union, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's good. Because, well, here's what I think. I think you get an opportunity to create some new rivals, so obviously Tip and Troy has always been a rival, and now they still are. But let's say Bethel and West Milton become rivals. Well, they've never played really that much before. So Bethel, West Milton could become a rival. Northridge and Layman could become a rival. You never know. I'm a big rivalry guy, so I like to see the ones like the Troy Pickle rivalry has been around forever. I would love to see, you know, an opportunity for these kids to not only play some different teams, but maybe play in a conference with teams more their size. You know, I can't say that for these conferences without looking. That's just my opinion on an overall view. But playing against competition that's your own school size is always good, I think. You know, now, on the other side, you look at someone like, the smaller schools like let's say Minster and that kind of stuff, and they play, you know, Versailles is Division III, and I think maybe Delphus, St. John, I don't know if they are or not. I don't. That's a little bit out of my area, but they could be Division III. So you look at like obviously they're playing pretty much same size school, but maybe a little bit bigger. But I just think it's important to see the rivalries between some of these schools. I mean, I love the Friday night rivalries on football. You see them as well when you do your football games. And it's just, I think it's great for the school and the student athletes to be able to get ready for a great new rivalry.
There's three ripple effects for myself. I mentioned I'm from West Alex, of course. With the new Western Ohio Athletic Conference, it's mainly the same schools, except for four of them going to the Three Rivers. And now they're adding Dixie and Preble Shawnee. And yeah. That's a great rivalry. That's great for South. I mean, you got 503 cover right there. So travel is nothing. At 35, there's Dixie and South right there. And swing up to North and Preble Shawnee. And for the Southwestern Buckeye League, they're losing so many of their small schools to a couple to the WOAC and a couple for the Three Rivers. Now that's going to leave them with, I think, 10. And that's Eaton to Waynesville now. And if the rumors are true that Clinton Massey and Wilmington are going to be added, I feel for my Eagle brethren in Preble County, because that's a trip into Clinton County.
Also, you look at Tipp City. So they were in the CBC. They were in the CBC with schools like Indian Lake and Ben Logan, of all places. And that was a trip. I went to Ben Logan for my son's track meet when he was in high school, and I was like, holy cow, this is a long drive up here. But now you look at, like, Tipp, their whole league is 8 minutes to Troy, 15 minutes to Piqua, 20 minutes to Sydney, 5 minutes to Vandalia, and then, of course, 45 minutes to Greenville. But that's basically everything is within 20 minutes except for Greenville. Everything was within 20 minutes of Tipp, and it really helps – that realignment and change in the conference really helped, especially on weeknights when they're trying to get the kids back home.
Absolutely. And the third ripple effect I was going to mention, the Eastern Cincinnati Conference, they lost Withrow. They're going back to the Cincinnati Metro Athletic Conference, but they added three schools in a kind of a return to the Fort Hinton Valley Conference, except without all those schools. It's like 10 schools now. Winton Woods, which got left out the first time of the ECC, they're in, and Loveland, the team I broadcast for, they are going there week 10, so I can't wait to see the Warriors. The Lebanon Warriors are also now in the ECC, out of the GWOC for the first time in quite some time, and Little Miami, and that sets up the Panthers and Kings Knights rivalry, which I believe was pretty big, because I think they share Mainville. I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones going to be coming up this year on the changes, that's for sure.
Now, let's say you have ultimate power to create a perfect conference. What schools are you taking nearby and why?
If I'm creating a super conference for athletics.
Yes. Something that's going to knock the tar out of other conferences and something that's going to be fun and, you know, competitive.
Ooh. So, I'm just going to stick with basketball because that's what I know.
Oh, that's fine.
Let's just do basketball. So, if I'm creating a super conference, well, I'm going to start way down in Dayton, and I'm going to start with taking Wayne. I'm going to take Wayne. Because of the fact that, you know, they've got, they always have great players and very athletic team, you know, love to pressure you, love to get after you on defense. Then I'm going to take Centerville because they're a very deep team. So I'm going to have Wayne and Centerville in my conference.
You can't split that rivalry up.
No. And then I'm going to bring in Minster in Fort Loramie. Minster and Fort Loramie, because Minster's in the MAC and they know how to win. They can compete. Fort Loramie and girls basketball, they might have been, some people say they could have been the best team in the area last year, maybe even a state in Division IV. I mean, them and Minster would have been a classic possible championship game had they met. Minster would have gone for three in a row, and Loramie was undefeated and was smacking everybody around last year. But I want those two in my conference. I want Centerville and Wayne in my conference. Who else do I want?
I'm sorry I kind of put a curveball on things, but it's just, hey, I like creativity. I like hearing what you would do.
I want Tipp in the conference because I want everybody to come here so I can see him play in my hometown. So let's bring them into conference too. Why not? And then, that's five. That's a good conference. So you got Centerville, Wayne, Tipp, Minster, and Loramie. That's pretty strong.
It's a pretty strong conference.
That's pretty strong. Yeah, definitely. Especially in the basketball side of things that I deal with. I mean, that's some pretty heavy stuff right there.
Jim, let's talk about this dreaded coronavirus and the quarantine on it. Let me ask you point blank. Basketball this year, are we seeing it or no?
Right now, I would say yes.
Okay. Yeah, I hope. I want sports back.
I think we're going to see back. I mean, as we're recording this, we're still waiting to hear about baseball and The NHL is supposed to start at the end of July. NBA is still haggling with the players, but hopefully they, you know, hopefully something develops to where everybody can get back. Just get us back into a little bit of normalcy so we can enjoy some of this stuff. And then I told somebody, I think I said, by the end of June, you're going to have the protests, which obviously brought people together. You had the Memorial Day weekend, which brought people together. I think by the end of June, you're going to see either a huge spike, which we have seen spikes. The hospitals are prepared for it, so they're ready for it if there is a spike. But then, you know, or no spike. If they don't have a spike, then potentially you're going to see a lot more things open up, and I think fall sports. I'm probably 90% that fall sports is going to happen. Unless we have something crazy, if something just gets out of control, then obviously that just supersedes anything I'm saying. But I think if things just stay stable and they manage where we're at, yes, I think we'll see fall sports. Will they be on time? That's a question. I mean, I could see it being delayed a couple weeks until after Labor Day. I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. Tip just announced they're starting school on August 31st. They moved it from like August 20th to the 31st, which gives their staff some more time to get everything in place for the new normal, as they like to say, the new norm. So I do believe we'll have sports unless we have a major problem between now and then. And I really think it's what we need. I think we need to get this stuff back.
There is one thing that worries me. It's the state of Florida. I think I read last night they reached 100,000 cases, and they're having a bad spike. And the thing is, Major League Soccer and the NBA have picked Orlando to restart their season. FC Cincinnati's going down there. The Columbus Crew going down there. They're in the same group, and I think that'll be some good football for those fans out there. And yes, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I worry about it and that huge spike in Florida, but I certainly hope we have fall sports because I haven't seen a live game or worked a live game since mid-March.
And, yeah, me neither.
Yeah,
I was sitting at Press Row at the state Final Four when they pulled Carroll off the floor and as they're warming up for the first game on that Thursday afternoon, and they said we're pulling the plug, and you know that was it. Well, I haven't seen a live sport since. And I think I've watched every big former sporting event. I've seen all four of the Stanley Cup for the Penguins in the last 2 months that they've re-aired. Mm-hmm. I've seen several Reds games they've re-aired. I've seen Tom Browning's perfect game about four times, I think. Mm-hmm. And seen the 75 and 76 World Series. And that's all that stuff is great to watch that stuff. But all right, I'm over it. Now let's go. Let's get back to some live stuff, some stuff that you aren't predetermined, you know, that like, so you don't know who won already. Let's get into the live stuff, kind of get us excited and kind of get this country back together.
I really haven't been into the archive sports. I mean, it's great and it's something, but for me, it's just the only time I really need that is if I build myself a DeLorean, go back in time and, you know, make a bet or two. It's like, hey, I think this is going to happen. It's like, oh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you'd be sitting pretty right now if that happened, wouldn't you?
Oh, like you wouldn't believe. Of course, that's the whole plot in Back to the Future, too. So it's a great movie.
I'd be like, I'm going to put $100,000 that Joe Montana throws this pass to Dwight Clark on this touchdown pass, you know, way back in the 80s. And, you know, just keep on going from there.
It's like the video version of Gray Sports Almanac. It's,
oh yeah,
but
yeah,
Jim. What are some of your favorite things about sports locally?
Well, you know, I'm really big on, you know, the Miami Valley sports and the fans getting an opportunity just to interact with people, talk about the Reds or talk about the Bengals or the Buckeyes or Wright State or Central State or whoever. I mean, the Bengals and, you know, this area of athletics is really good. We saw what Dayton did last year. We mm-hmm. saw that they had a chance to possibly do something really special, which was cut short. Wright State, not to be outdone, had a great year. Both of those schools had great years. The women's programs, Wright State and Dayton, have both had great years over the last several. So getting to watch some of that, you look at some of the smaller schools, Sinclair, Edison State, Cedarville, Urbana before they closed their doors. There were all the local athletes that got a chance to, for me personally, getting a chance to go to Urbana or Cedarville or Wittenberg to watch players play that I saw not too long ago playing in high school, just to say, hey, it's great to catch up with you at this next level of basketball. Your game's going well. And I just love the local sports scene, because I really think they have a great fan base and we all get behind them. We get a chance to live the dream that some of these other people get to live with watching, these young athletes do well or the professionals, the Reds. I thought they were going to have a great year. They might have a great year, as short as it's going to be. But getting a chance to watch, your hometown team is always definitely worth, getting excited about.
Now, what would you like to see in the future of sports and media around here in the Miami Valley?
Ooh, this could get me in trouble. Can we shut off social media for about a year?
Good luck.
I love social media, and I say that half jokingly. I love social media. I'm a big, as you are, we're both big in social media. Mm. We both have a lot of, quote, followers, or whatever you want to call us, that does a lot of stuff with social media. But if you think about it, there's some days when I'm like, why am I looking at this stuff? It's just like the one good thing about social media that I like is you don't have to wait until let's bring back the 90s again. We don't have to wait until the next day to hear about news or sports. With Twitter, you're refreshing it during with the baseball situation, mm-hmm. the fact that they're supposedly going to announce an agreement. You're refreshing it every 2 minutes, waiting to see that agreement. Back in the day, the media is like, you have to wait till, you probably saw it on the news, but if you're working all day long, I was working, all day long, didn't have a cell phone back in 1993. Mm-hmm. So who knows what's going on in the world? Now with today's media, especially social media, we're getting stuff immediately, instantaneous news. We just had a big trade take place. Here's the story. We just had this take place. Here's the story. And, I think it's for those of us who just need the immediate news, like me and you, we both like to see the immediate stuff happen.
Yeah.
I think it's good. And I like the direction it's going. I don't like to see all the junk on there that's on there, all the arguing and bickering all the time. But I do think for a news format, as far as getting us what we need to know and what we want to know, I think it's a nice improvement over 15, 20 years ago.
Now, for those that are interested in becoming writers, or they want to write their own book about sports, what advice can you give them?
Change your mind.
You're like the second person that said change your mind during the interviews, which I've done about 20 of this quarantine, so that might be a good ratio.
No, all kidding aside, I love what I do. I have a regular job. This isn't my how I feed my family. I have a regular job. I just love sports. And I've been writing sports, covering sports part-time for the local papers here in town for a long time. You get to meet some great people. You get to express just telling a story for people that aren't at the game, for that grandparent that can't get out to watch their grandkids play. You create the story for them to read. And it's a great sense of excitement knowing that, hey, Joey's grandfather or whatever is going to read this about his grandson hitting the winning shot or scoring 30 points or hitting the home run to give the team the victory or whatever. I think it's great for that self-fulfillment of, hey, I'm making a difference in this individual's life, or, you know, any reader, you know, there are people that read the paper, religiously looking for scores, you know, and even though the dailies don't do a lot of like scores, like the next day after anymore, which, you know, it's for various reasons. But the weeklies that I've written for has been great because you really, you know, you can really go into detail. You can do feature stories on kids, which people love to read about that. And that's what I do all summer for the paper in Tip City. I do a returning athlete feature every week on a Tip kid and a Bethel kid. So every week throughout the summer, people that read the paper in town can read about these athletes and get to know them a little bit more going into next sports season. And it gives me an opportunity to tell their story. And that's why I got into it. I just love to be able to make people happy to read, you know, my thoughts or whoever, you know, on the game or a story on such and such athlete. And it's great. I think it's great for them to be able to enjoy that.
Jim, how can people follow your work and you on social media? And what is your website?
So the website is jimdebelt.com. And the Twitter account is jdabs86. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook, which is just my name, Jim DeBelt. And my Instagram account is jdabsbb. I do that once in a while. I do not, will not, and refuse to do TikTok. I know that's the big thing with kids. Hey, I got on Twitter. A lot of kids are on Twitter, and now it's older people, and there's still kids on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Instagram, you know, Snapchat. I have a Snapchat account, but I don't really know how to use that too much. But TikTok, that's where I draw the line.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the article I posted, but. Yeah, it's a good thing you don't use TikTok just because of the fact how much stuff is actually, you know, kept in the processors. I don't know how to say that, but there's a lot of stuff on your phone that they can track, and it's a lot. It's like, what apps do you have? What apps did you delete? How hot is your phone? Or how much free space do you have in your hard drive? Where are you at?
How about this, Lee? You know, you're driving by and you're like, oh man, I need to stop at Texas Roadhouse sometime. Their steak is really good. And then 3 hours later, you have a Texas Roadhouse ad on your Facebook page.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? How it's so coincidental, isn't it, Lee?
I don't know if that's my favorite thing about social media or not,
I'm an open book, you know, I don't have anything to hide, but it's one of those things where, you know, it does dig into your privacy a little bit, you know, I mean, it's Big Brother's listening. So you just got to, you know, be careful what you say.
Thank goodness I'm boring. So there we go.
Right. I hear that. I know the feeling, man. I know the feeling. Just, hey, if you want to learn about basketball, you can listen to me if you want. Otherwise, you'll be pretty bored.
Jim, one last question before we wrap up. What is the name of the book?
Lee, the book is going to be called The Ohio 150. It's a comprehensive look at girls basketball in Ohio, 1990-2020.
Very nice.
Like I said, it'll be available and hopefully in March, knock on wood. I just knocked on wood. That's me knocking on wood.
Hang on, my Rodecaster's taking up my table.
And so with that said, March, hopefully early March, it'll be out. Like I said, I'll have them for sale at the state tournament. Obviously, you'll see them all over on Twitter because I'll be blasting it on social media for a couple months, you know, to get the word out about the fact that they're for sale. And, you know, hopefully it just keeps going well. And everybody's been really, really wonderful. I don't expect that to change as far as the players are concerned. Now it's just getting it all written.
Jim, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. And that will do it for episode 165 of the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast. Again, Jim DeBelt, the guest on this episode. And we'll talk to you again for episode
Thank you 66. For listening to another episode of the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast with Lee W. Mowen. To subscribe to the podcast, please visit the LeeWMowen.com/podcast. From there, you can choose your favorite platform, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, and many more. Interact with the podcast and hosts on Twitter at the Lee W. Mowen and at Sinday Pod. Like the Facebook page, the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast, and download the free Flick Chat app, then search for the local Sunday Sports Group to submit your future Mowen's Mailbag questions. The closing theme is Lights Go Down by Dan Hennig, provided by the YouTube Music Library Collection. This is Lee W. Mowen, and I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. Please join me again next week on the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast.